Ladies and gentlemen, mesdames et messieurs, I have the privilege of introducing to you the moderator of this evening's panel, Monsieur Olivier Marcel. Depuis 2011, Monsieur Marcel est le vice-principal de McGill Communication et Relations Extérieures. Auparavant, il a travaillé à l'Assemblée nationale du Québec comme chef du cabinet pour Clément Gignac et Benoît Pelletier et comme conseiller pour le Premier ministre Jean Charest. Monsieur Marcel est l'auteur de plusieurs ouvrages sur le paysage politique du Québec, y compris une étude de Claude Ryan, « La raison et l'équilibre, libéralisme, nationalisme et catholicisme dans la pensée de Claude Ryan au devoir, 1962 à 1978 ». I have had the pleasure over the past several weeks of collaborating with Mr. Marcel on this symposium. He was a valuable contributor to the symposium's executive, and this event could not have become what it is without his assistance and that of his team at McGill's Office of Communications and External Relations. Mesdames et Messieurs, Olivier Marcel.
So thank you, Robert. Mesdames et messieurs, bonsoir. C'est avec beaucoup de plaisir que je vous souhaite à mon tour la bienvenue à McGill et au Centre Newman. Et surtout de vous voir en si grand nombre pour, dans le fond, célébrer en quelque sorte la vie et l'héritage de quelqu'un qui a été très important dans l'édification du Québec moderne, M. Claude Ryan. C'est un honneur pour l'Université de collaborer avec le Centre Newman et d'autres partenaires pour pouvoir organiser ce symposium. Et sans plus tarder, nous allons entrer donc dans le vif du sujet, la vie et l'héritage de M. Ryan. Et ce soir, donc, nous allons parler de l'homme, en fait. Le journaliste, l'homme politique, l'homme de foi, le mentor et le père de famille, vu par ceux qui l'ont connu. Je vais maintenant introduire nos trois panélistes. D'abord, à ma gauche, mais en fait à votre...
Non, je suis à ma gauche,
oui. Oui. Effectivement. Effectivement. The Honorable Thomas Mulcair. Thomas Mulcair is a Member of Parliament for Outremont, leader of the official opposition, and leader of Canada's New Democratic Party since 2012. Mr. Mulcair was both a colleague and friend of Claude Ryan. Previous to his career as a federal politician, Mr. Mulcair served three consecutive terms as Liberal MNE for Chomedey, managing key responsibilities such as Minister of Sustainable Development, Environment, and Parks. And you might have read this morning in Le Devoir a very interesting text from Mr. Mulcair about Monsieur Ryan, as we used to call him. Jeffrey Kelly, member of the National Assembly for the riding of Jacques Cartier, has been first elected to the Quebec National Assembly in 1994 and is currently in his sixth consecutive term as Liberal member for Jacques Cartier. In addition to representing his constituents, he serves as chair of the Official Opposition Caucus and as the Official Opposition Critic for Aboriginal Affairs and Relations with the English-speaking community. From September 1990 until February 1994, Mr. Kelly served on Clone Ryan's staff as political assistant when Mr. Ryan was Minister of Public Security and Municipal Affairs. And finally, Patrice Ryan. Patrice Ryan is the son of the late Claude Ryan, and he is president of Ryan Affaires Publiques, a public policy relations firm he founded in 2006. And I'm glad to see that the three of them are McGill graduates.
And Irish.
No, I've been rejected. Do you want that? Do you want? I've been rejected.
Not good enough.
But now I'm glad to be back. That was part of my anecdote I told the administration when I've been hired. So, mesdames et messieurs, bienvenue encore. And a few words on how we will proceed. I will invite each panelist to talk for exactly 15 minutes. And afterwards, we will open the floor for questions for approximately 30 minutes. Probably a bit less than that, because I know that some of you have some obligation. So without any further delay, Mr. Ryan, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Olivier. Merci. Je pensais vous préparer des histoires, des anecdotes, puis finalement, j'ai décidé de me laisser guider par la main de Dieu. Je pense que c'est correct avec vous. Pas vrai. Pas vrai. J'ai changé d'idée. Après ça, j'ai changé d'idée. Excusez-moi, ça a été vraiment un plaisir de rentrer ici ce soir, de voir plein de visages de notre passé. It's been great. I walked in here tonight and a lot of people I didn't expect to see. I saw John, whose spouse Luz helped us raise our beautiful children. So, John, I want you to tell Luz thank you again. I know we say this every time, but she's a part of the family, and so are you. J'ai vu mon ancien voisin, Eric, qui habitait à côté de chez nous sur le boulevard Saint-Joseph, Eric Couture, que je n'avais pas vu depuis 30 ans, 40 ans, je ne sais pas trop, c'est quand même incroyable, le temps passe vite, donc toujours un plaisir. On a vu notre ex beau-frère, Christian Saint-Germain, comme mon frère l'appelle, notre mononcle des États. Christian a autant d'anecdotes sur la famille Ryan que nous autres. Donc merci beaucoup à l'Université McGill, au Centre Newman, d'avoir organisé ce symposium, cette soirée, et de me permettre à moi de m'épancher et de partager mes sentiments avec vous. Un gros merci aussi au professeur Gauvreau. Je ne sais pas s'il est encore là. OK. Professeur Gauvreau, pardon. On est tellement enthousiaste, on a tellement hâte de lire ça. Juste dans le petit glimpse que vous nous avez donné un peu plus tôt ce soir, on a appris plein de choses sur notre terre. Donc, keep it coming, c'est bon. Ça, Gauvreau, entre autres, a raconté à quel point mon père aimait Saint-Augustin, et il y a mon frère Paul ici présent ce soir, qui aimerait que je l'appelle Belle, parce que mon père aimait tellement Saint-Augustin que quand son premier fils est né, il voulait l'appeler Augustin. Et c'est notre mère, Dieu est son âme, c'est notre mère qui a empêché mon père de faire cette erreur-là. J'avais peur, je pense, que tu fasses appeler Tigus ou Gus ou quelque chose comme ça. C'était populaire à l'époque. Donc, mais Madeleine, évidemment, pour empêcher Claude de faire cette erreur catastrophique, n'a pas juste dit non, ça n'a pas de carline de bon sens. Elle a été obligée de monter avec lui un système. Donc, ce qu'ils ont fait, c'est qu'ils ont monté un système selon lequel ils nous nommaient selon le saint le plus proche de notre date de naissance. Donc, moi, par exemple, je suis né au milieu du mois de mars, près de la Saint-Patrice, comme on l'appelait à l'époque, la Saint-Patrick maintenant. Et donc, c'est pour ça qu'ils m'ont appelé Patrice, parce que ça prenait un système, ça prenait... merci d'être là avec ta belle famille. C'est un plaisir aussi de revenir à McGill. Comme disait Olivier, je suis un diplômé de McGill. Je fais ici un passage peu remarquable et peu remarqué, mais, il n'y a pas un seul de mes ex-voisins ici ce soir. Il y a mon ex-voisine aussi, Marc-Claude, qui était également étudiante à McGill. C'est surtout à McGill qu'on a fraternisé. Marc-Claude est maintenant... ma charmante femme et la mère de mes beaux-enfants. Donc, merci à McGill pour ça, au moins. L'éducation que j'ai reçue ici, l'éducation universitaire, j'ai appris que c'est pas ce que l'université te donne, c'est ce que tu y mets. Donc, c'est ma faute, là. Je blâme personne pour ça. Sur une note plus sérieuse, quand je pense à ces années à McGill, c'était au milieu des années 80 que j'ai étudié à McGill, quand je pense à ces années-là, c'est pas de mon père surtout que j'ai un souvenir, c'est plus de ma mère que j'ai un souvenir, parce que à peu près au même moment où moi j'étais ici, ma mère était malade et elle était prêtée régulièrement à l'Hôtel Dieu, à l'hôpital à côté d'ici. Donc, je me rappelle quand même de très, très nombreux après-midi passés avec elle à lire mes Sports Illustrated, parce que je pense pas que je faisais mes lectures d'université, mais donc j'avais une connexion plus avec ma mère pendant mes années à McGill qu'avec mon père. J'étais très content. Il y a des gens plutôt cet après-midi qui ont parlé de Madeleine. J'étais très content qu'on parle de ça, parce que c'est certainement un des éléments importants dans la vie de mon père que ce mariage. C'est une relation qui a duré, même si évidemment, la vie de ma mère a été coupée beaucoup trop tôt. C'est une relation qui a été très, très intense, puis quand même assez longue. Ils se sont connus dans les mouvements d'Action catholique. Donc, toutes les étapes de la vie de mon père, on peut raconter une portion de ça à travers ma mère aussi. Ils sont connus dans les mouvements d'Action catholique. Le professeur Gaudreau en a très bien parlé. Quand mon père était au devoir, il a expliqué aussi qu'il n'y avait pas un câline d'éditorial qui était écrit sans que Madeleine ait quelque chose à dire dessus, soit avant, soit après. Je me rappelle couché dans mon lit, je les écoutais parler dans la cuisine, puis je me disais, tu sais, qu'est-ce qu'ils ont tant à se dire, c'est incroyable, ça fait 25 ans qu'ils sont ensemble, puis ils ont encore tant de choses à se dire, et bon, ben, chacun d'entre nous, c'est évidemment le genre de de relations et de famille qu'on essaie de construire avec avec nos conjoints. Puis après ça, évidemment, en politique, il y a eu la période en politique où Madeleine a été vraiment une partner de mon père. Là, elle a fait campagne, elle a beaucoup, beaucoup eu de plaisir avec lui. Donc professeur Gauvreau, vous avez une grosse responsabilité de refléter toute la force de cette union-là dans ce que vous allez raconter. On a très hâte, je ne sais pas si je l'ai dit déjà. Je m'excuse, l'émotion est forte. Ça me fait penser à mon père que j'ai vu pleurer deux fois dans ma vie. Peut-être que les autres en auront plus à raconter. Moi, c'est deux fois, évidemment, quand il a perdu ma mère. Mais aussi l'autre fois, puis quand j'étais petit, je comprenais pas trop, ça me faisait un peu rire. Quand Paul VI, quand le pape... Grosse crise de larmes, non mais ça... pour moi, c'était incompréhensible. Je disais, c'est qui, ce gars-là, le connais-tu? C'est un ami. Puis le professeur Gauvreau, encore là, vous allez m'aider à comprendre pourquoi c'était si intense sa relation avec le pape Paul VI. J'ai hâte de le savoir parce qu'il nous parlait pas vraiment de ça. On n'avait pas une relation très, très intellectuelle avec vous, avec mon père. C'est plus une relation normale, de relation familiale normale. Parlant de famille, je pense qu'on peut pas, et ça a été fait plus tôt, il y en a qui en ont parlé, mais on peut pas ne pas souligner aussi le fait que, par pur hasard, il y a 10 jours à peu près, mon oncle Yves, le plus jeune des trois frères Ryan, est décédé. On était, c'est assez incroyable parce que depuis qu'Olivier, puis M. Serré, puis M. Dipédé m'ont parlé du symposium, évidemment, on est un peu replongé dans nos souvenirs. Puis là, avec le départ de mon oncle Yves, non seulement on est plongé là-dedans, mais en plus on a revu plein de gens de la famille qu'on voit pas très souvent, tout ça. Donc c'était assez remarquable. Yves était une personnalité complètement différente. Je vous encourage encore, professeur Gauvreau, à explorer cet aspect-là de la vie de mon père, les trois frères, la dynamique des trois frères, tout ça. C'est assez curieux. Les funérailles de mon oncle, c'était un événement assez joyeux, en fait. C'était assez drôle. On a beaucoup ri parce que c'était un homme plein de vie, plein de joie, un peu comme mon père, différent. J'ai retenu des funérailles la phrase que le diacre, est-ce que c'est un diacre? Je savais pas c'était quoi un diacre non plus. Ça est à faire aussi. Le diacre, l'homélie, donc une homélie. En full dress, j'ai pas trop compris ce qui se passait là. Bref, on dit plein de choses gentilles, plein de choses jolies sur mon oncle, mais ostentatoire, ouais, très. Et ils ont dit plein de choses jolies, mais il a dit une phrase très, très, très simple, mais très, très belle, puis que j'ai. C'est un peu l'esprit de ce que je vais vous dire ce soir. Il a dit l'important, c'est de ne pas oublier, donc c'est un peu pour ça qu'on est ici, donc c'est parfait. Puis évidemment, là, on en a parlé déjà beaucoup, mais il y a Blandine, ma grand-mère, la mère de ces trois gars, un avocat qui est devenu juge à la Cour supérieure, un petit journaliste de quartier qui est devenu maire de Montréal-Nord et qui l'est resté pendant 39 ans, et un défroqué, un drop-out d'université qui est devenu directeur de l'Action catholique, directeur du Devoir, chef du Parti libéral et ensuite ministre de plein d'affaires et professeur au Centre Newman. C'est quand même impressionnant que cette femme-là ait élevé ces trois gars-là seuls dans les années 20, dans les années 30, alors que c'était à peu près impensable à l'époque, donc une petite pensée pour elle. Et je répète là, un gros merci à McGill pour d'avoir organisé ça. Merci pour deux raisons principales. Premièrement, parce que vous avez donné, je sais pas où est le professeur Serré là, mais vous avez donné à mon père une deuxième maison, une dernière maison professionnelle dans le fond. Il a beaucoup apprécié son passage ici. He loved it here. He talked about it all the time. He was happy for the contact with the students. He was happy at the reception. He was getting a thrill for him. So thanks for giving him that. Et merci aussi évidemment de nous rappeler le souvenir de mon père avec le symposium. Deux jours sur la vie de mon père, ça nous permet de nous rappeler. Moi-même, à l'occasion, je donne un cours dans une petite université de l'autre côté de la montagne, l'Université de Montréal. Je sais pas si vous avez entendu parler de cette institution-là. Pour la première fois de ma vie, l'année dernière, au printemps 2013, j'ai donné le cours à un groupe de 25 étudiants, 45 heures qu'on a passé ensemble, donc 15 soirées, et il y en a pas un qui m'a demandé « Hey, Ryan, es-tu parent avec l'autre Ryan par hasard? » Pas un. Donc, le temps passe, les gens oublient, donc c'est important de, comme disait le diacre, c'est important de ne pas oublier. Comme tout le monde, quand je pense à mon père, je me pose des questions, je me dis... OK. Mais je pense qu'on m'entend dans le fond, de toute façon. Non, pas vraiment? OK. comme tout le monde, je me pose plein de questions. Où est-ce que mon père serait sur la charte? Est-ce qu'il serait actif sur Twitter? Est-ce qu'il serait bon quand il passe à tout le monde en parle? Je sais pas. Qui sait? Je sais pas. Mais donc, peut-être ce à quoi je peux vous aider à avoir la réponse, c'est quel genre de père c'était, comment c'était être le fils de, quel genre de vie de famille on avait. Ça, on peut peut-être essayer ça. Donc, c'est clair que pour lui, même si c'était un homme très occupé, c'est clair que la vie de famille était très, très importante. Donc, chaque année, on s'arrangeait pour prendre des vacances. Chaque année, je me rappelle d'être allé dans les provinces de l'Atlantique. Je me rappelle d'être allé dans le Nord, dans les Laurentides. On allait souvent dans l'Est des États-Unis. Toujours 2-3 semaines autour du mois d'août, quand c'était plus tranquille. L'actualité au Québec était un peu plus tranquille. Donc, évidemment, nous, quand on était petits, il était journaliste. Donc, c'était l'actualité qui drivait un peu son agenda, son emploi du temps. Et donc, au mois d'août, 2-3 semaines à l'extérieur de Montréal, c'était sacré. On faisait toujours ça. Donc rassurez-vous, même si il était très occupé, il s'occupait un peu de nous autres. Et je vais être obligé de corriger certaines affaires. Il y en a qui ont parlé un petit peu ce matin. Donc, peut-être le plus simple, ce serait que je vous raconte une fin de semaine typique. Évidemment, c'était la semaine, c'était plutôt ma mère qui s'occupait de nous autres. Et lui, il prenait un peu la responsabilité de ses enfants la fin de semaine. Et ma mère prenait une petite pause bien méritée. On était 5. 7 ans de différence entre le plus vieux et le plus jeune. Donc, c'était quand même assez intense comme vie de famille pour ma mère. Donc, la fin de semaine, c'était plutôt mon père qui s'occupait de nous autres. Et donc, je vais peut-être essayer de vous expliquer une fin de semaine typique. On se levait le samedi matin, on déjeunait à la maison, et après ça, on allait faire les commissions. On allait faire l'épicerie, on allait faire les courses. Là, il y a quelqu'un qui a dit que c'était chez Steinberg. Erreur. Dominions. sur la rue Mont-Royal. Dominions, et moi, je sais pas si c'était juste moi, peut-être c'est juste moi, que c'est des affaires qui te marquent, puis les autres pas, mais après Dominions, souvent on allait à la pâtisserie Frenette sur la rue Mont-Royal aussi. Frenette, il faisait du pain, il faisait des beignes qu'on adorait, et pour lesquels on se battait, puis mon père souvent achetait du jambon, donc on mangeait vite un petit sandwich au jambon qui nous permettait de faire l'activité de l'après-midi qui était... On se replace ici, là, fin des années 60, début des années 70, milieu des années 70, l'activité familiale, c'était un tour d'auto. It is what it is, tu sais. J'ai deux de mes enfants qui sont ici, Juliette et Alice, et j'essaie de m'imaginer samedi après-midi. Hey, les filles, on va-tu faire un tour d'auto? Que ça vous tente? On va faire ça après. Puis après. Mais ce soir, on pourrait peut-être aller regarder les avions décoller à Dorval, si vous voulez. Donc, on faisait un tour de tour, et comme il était obsédé par l'actualité, par ce qui se passait à Montréal, tout ça, il nous amenait voir un peu des chantiers de construction, ou il nous amenait aux endroits où se passaient des choses, des manifestations, des marches, des projets de chantier. Donc, je me rappelle d'être allé visiter le chantier du Stade olympique. Je sais pas si vous avez fait ça quand vous étiez jeune, certains d'entre vous, mais c'était assez impressionnant, les camions qui rentraient plein de béton, qui ressortaient plein de béton, qui rentraient plein de béton, qui ressortaient plein de béton. Ça, je l'ai lu dans les journaux. Je me rappelle pas de l'avoir vu. Celle qui est mémorable, tu sais, on a parlé beaucoup de la petite école de l'autre côté de la montagne, l'Université de Montréal. L'Université de Montréal était en pleine croissance dans les années 70, et ils ont construit Polytechnique en haut de la côte. C'est Paul qui me rappelait cette histoire-là tout à l'heure. Est-ce que je vous ai dit que Claude était pas exactement le meilleur pilote automobile? Quand il est entré en politique, on lui a donné un chauffeur. Et il insistait la fin de semaine pour ditcher son chauffeur, parce qu'il disait, tu sais, je suis un homme indépendant, je suis un homme libre, j'ai pas besoin d'un chauffeur, je sais pas quoi. Mais en fait, il en avait vraiment besoin d'un. Donc, on va voir le chantier de construction de la nouvelle Polytechnique en haut de la montagne. Et moi, j'étais petit, je me rappelle pas vraiment de ça. Mais les plus vieux dans la famille, on est les 5 dans l'auto. Madeleine est tranquille à la maison en train de lire des romans, les pieds sur la table, probablement. Mais les 5 dans l'auto. Et vous savez, Polytechnique, c'est en haut de la montagne. Alors, il recule pour stationner l'auto, et les deux roues dans l'arrière se retrouvent sur le bord de la falaise. On a échappé belle cette fois-là. On est tous sortis de là, et ce qui ne vous tue pas vous rend plus fort. Donc, Et c'était pas sa seule mésaventure. Hélas, j'ai un peu hérité de ses talents de conducteur, là. Donc, je voudrais profiter de l'occasion pour remercier Maître Manon Dion, qui m'a aidé à ne pas perdre mon permis de conduire l'année passée. Elle n'est pas ici ce soir, mais c'est une grande amie maintenant. Donc, une fin de semaine. Ah oui, bon, donc là, on est rendu samedi soir, on a fait le tour de tour, il nous ramène à la maison. Il dit, Madeleine, là, franchement, j'ai eu mon fun, c'est à toi de t'en occuper. Mais le dimanche, il réussissait quand même à nous porter un peu d'attention. Et ce qu'on faisait le dimanche matin, on se levait, on déjeunait, on allait downtown, on allait dans le bas de la ville, comme il disait. On allait dans le bas de la ville à Metropolitan News acheter le New York Times du dimanche, qui était, là, je sais plus quelle heure il était, là. Quelle heure il était? Quand le New York Times a rentré, il devait être 10-11 heures. Et là, et professeur Gauvreau prenait une petite note ici. C'était dimanche, mais il travaillait. C'était le samedi qu'il travaillait pas parce que le dimanche, il n'avait pas de devoir. Donc, le samedi, toute la journée, il niaisait avec nous. Il visitait des chantiers de construction, tout ça. Et le dimanche, il faisait semblant de niaiser avec nous, mais en fait, il nous amenait au journal. Et là, on courait dans la salle de rédaction pendant que lui vérifiait que le journal du lendemain était correct. Donc, c'était une journée de travail, mais probablement que dans ses papiers qu'il a écrit, il disait que c'était une journée de repos parce que, bon, c'était un gâteau, puis le dimanche, on était supposé se reposer. Mais, let the facts, je sais pas comment on dit ça. OK. Alors voilà. Ça, c'est une fin de semaine avec Claude. Je pense que votre vie est plus de fun, les filles. Hein? C'est pas mal tout, là. Ce que je dirais après ça, c'est que, évidemment, après le décès de Madeleine en 85, il est devenu un peu plus que le père de fin de semaine qu'il était. Il est devenu un peu plus. Nous, on était plus vieux, évidemment, mais il a toujours été là. Il a toujours été très présent. C'était une présence qui n'était pas imposante, pas autoritaire. Tu sais, l'image qu'on véhicule, c'est que c'était un homme autoritaire, sévère, tout ça. C'était vraiment pas ça. Il nous disait jamais qu'est-ce qu'il pensait qu'on devait faire. Il nous donnait jamais, on demandait conseil, il refusait de le faire. Il disait, you know better. C'est à toi de faire ton propre chemin. Il prêchait plus par l'exemple que par les ordres. Je sais pas s'il était pareil en politique, j'ai pas l'impression. Ah oui, une dernière chose que je voulais dire. La photo qui est là, ça vient de sa maison qu'il a achetée et qui a occupé les fins de semaine pendant quelques années dans le comté d'Argenteuil. On parle jamais du comté d'Argenteuil, mais c'est un morceau important de sa vie et de sa carrière politique. Donc, j'aimerais ça qu'on se rappelle de ça quand on écrit des livres sur lui, si jamais quelqu'un a le goût de faire ça. Cette photo-là a été prise à son chalet. C'est une super photo. On voit qu'il est relax, on mange de chemise, pas de cravate, tout ça. Il était bien là. Donc, je vais arrêter ici. Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup, Patrice. Merci infiniment pour ce beau témoignage. Jeffrey Kelly.
Merci, Olivier. J'ai changé le micro. Et à mon tour, je vais faire écho à ce que Patrice vient de dire. Merci beaucoup au Centre Newman, parce que je peux témoigner comme quelqu'un qui a travaillé pour M. Ryan les années après sa retraite de la vie politique. L'importance to St. Newman, Dan Siri, you're here tonight, and many times Mr. Ryan spoke about the important work he did here. It was really a new professional challenge for him that was very important. So let me say at the beginning of my comments tonight, thank you very much, because I can say from the other end how much Mr. Ryan appreciated the opportunity to be associated with the center and associated with McGill University. Like Patrice, I'm also a survivor of 1960s parenting, but we'd go for a drive on Saturday afternoon, but it was the locks at Cote St. Catherine. I'm one of four boys, and Dad would take us out and we'd watch the water fill up and the water go down, and boats come in, the boats come out. It was a lot easier parenting in the 60s, I guess. But really, I'd like just to talk about my experience of working for Mr. Ryan. I worked for Mr. Ryan for 4 years, and I prepared my remarks in English, but afterwards, obviously, answer questions in French, but I just wanted to talk about these four very rich years in my life. It is impossible to discuss the life and legacy of Claude Ryan without examining the man, his character, and his work habits. If an element of leadership is the ability to lead by example, Claude Ryan was a model of what politics and public life can be. Unfortunately, some of these characteristics are out of step with our times today, but a review of his approach to public life produces lessons that are important today as ever. In September 1990, I was hired as a member of Mr. Ryan's political staff. The immediate reaction from my friends in political circles was, poor you. He works all the time and is no fun at all. These predictions proved to be half right. We did work very hard, but we also enjoyed our time working with Mr. Ryan and seeing up close his fertile mind at work. The 4 years which I spent as a member of his staff were some of the most rewarding moments in my professional life. It is well known that Mr. Ryan was a tireless worker. His ability to read and retain information from a stack of documents he devoured each week was simply astounding. And pity the political staffer or civil servant who ignored this fact. I remember occasions where Mr. Ryan would question us on a reference he found in the footnotes of a document. Who reads footnotes anyway? We quickly learnt that, working for Mr. Ryan, footnotes and appendices were required reading. I remember one year, as we were heading off for the Christmas break, we were discussing what we'd be reading over the holidays. And just in a parenthesis here to tell you a little bit what kind of boss he was, Mr. Ryan every year gave all of his staff books. So somewhere around December 15th, he would show up at the office with huge bags of books that he gave to all of his staff. They were always very thoughtfully chosen books. He knew I liked American, we shared a great interest in American history, so every year for all of his staff he had these wonderful books, wonderful gifts. He must have made booksellers in Montreal very, very happy in Quebec City with all these purchases. But so we were talking about novels we might be reading or everything else like this, so we asked Mr. Ryan, well, what are you going to read this year? And he said, I'm going to read all of the briefs that were submitted to the Supreme Court of Canada on the case dealing with the confessional nature of Quebec schools. And sure enough, we saw him loading up in the car to go up to Lac-Saint-Jean in Argenteuil, stacks and stacks of briefs. I think they were filled two or three boxes. And I know he probably, that Christmas, read every word of all these documents on that case which dealt with the confessional nature of our schools. This thoroughness was Mr. Ryan's trademark. In 1993, as minister responsible for the Charter of the French Language, he was required to draft legislation that would have either renewed the use of the notwithstanding clause of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms to protect the science provisions of Bill 101, or amend and liberalize the Charter of the French Language. Mr. Ryan established a blue ribbon panel of civil servants to explore all possibilities. Senior civil servants from the Ministries of Justice, Immigration, and Education, and the various language agencies were present and represented on this committee. My friend Tom Mulcair was there in his capacity as president of the Office des Professions. Another friend, John Parazella, who was working for the Premier's office at the time, was there as well. Every week, was it Wednesday morning or Tuesday morning, we attended a breakfast meeting to examine all of the possibilities. Mr. Ryan's goal was a balance between the profound respect for the responsibility to protect and preserve the French language and culture in Quebec and his small L liberal sense that individual and minority rights must be respected as well. To achieve this balance, he also met with a broad range of representatives from civil society, commercial associations, trade unions, human rights lawyers, groups defending the Charter of the French Language. The result was Bill 86, an ambitious reform of the Charter of the French Language that ended the use of the notwithstanding clause and brought a measure of social peace to a difficult language debate that had fractured Quebec society at the time. And as a result of this exhaustive legislative process, Bill 86 was a state-of-the-art bill for its period. Instead of drafting legislation in haste, we know a little bit about that, Tom, which we see far too often at all levels of government, Mr. Ryan's deliberate and thorough approach resulted in a piece of legislation that has withstood the test of time, both in the courts and in the court of public opinion. Mr. Ryan also had a gift for reminding us that the first principles involved in any issue as we face them as a team. In October of 1990, Premier Bourassa shuffled his cabinet and shifted Mr. Ryan from the education portfolio, which he adored, to the dual role of Minister of Municipal Affairs and Public Security. The challenges of the position were numerous, including a controversial review of the responsibilities of provinces and municipalities and who pays for what, managing relations with the police and the Mohawks in the wake of the OCA crisis, and other delicate issues. At first, Mr. Ryan was disappointed with his new tasks, but as was his way, he threw himself into the job and went to work. Within a few days, he had prepared a text addressing the importance to our society of providing clean drinking water to the population and recalling the debates that led to the creation of the public provision of safe drinking water across Quebec. On another occasion in late 1990, Mr. Ryan spoke to l'état-major, the senior brass of the Sûreté de Québec, a police force whose morale had been undermined by the OCA crisis, the media spotlight under which it had carried out its work, and the death of one of its members. In his speech, Mr. Ryan recalled the basic principles of civilian oversight of the police in a democratic society. Elected officials can and must play a role in setting objectives and developing policies for the police force. But the operational side remains the responsibility of the police, free from political interference and second-guessing. It was a magnificent performance, and it helped the Sûreté du Québec to rebound from the difficult summer of 1990. For these reasons, it was not surprising that in 2002, when Jean Charest was looking for someone to write a summary of liberal values in Quebec, he would turn to Claude Ryan. The result was a succinct summary of liberal values, individual freedoms, the Quebec identity, economic development, social justice, our democratic system of justice, and Quebec's role in the Canadian Federation. These core values have sustained the Quebec Liberal Party since Confederation and will continue to serve as a compass for Liberals in Quebec in the years ahead. This document once again highlighted Claude Ryan's ability to synthesize the first principles of political action. Mr. Ryan also believed it was important to take the time necessary before reaching a decision or making a public announcement. This would, on occasion, drive the communications officials in Premier Bourassa's office crazy. I remember long meetings with the Grand Chief of the Mohawks of Kahnawake, Joe Morton, on Fridays next door at Complexe Desjardins in Montreal, with many journalists waiting at our door for comments. As the deadlines passed for the electronic media to get a clip for the 6 p.m. broadcasts, the journalists would become increasingly impatient. But Mr. Ryan would take the time to discuss with the Grand Chief the messages they would like to share with the media, even if the meeting ran long. At the end of the day, I think someone said it this afternoon, Mr. Ryan was above all a newspaper man. As long as La Presse and his beloved Devoir got their quote, Mr. Ryan was satisfied. The print rests, the electronic media was ephemeral. The communications would shake their heads in dismay and try to remind Mr. Ryan that far more people watch television news than read newspapers, but their efforts to convince Mr. Ryan of the importance of the deadline for the electronic media were in vain. There are important lessons for us today in Mr. Ryan's work habits. He worked hard. He was thorough. He always attempted to go back to basic principles or values as part of his analysis in the decision-making process. In both of Mr. Ryan's fields, journalism and politics, these traits have been eclipsed by the need for speed. The political world is more wired than ever, and politicians are encouraged to jump into the world of Twitter and Facebook with an emphasis on quick reactions, snap judgments, and stifling brevity. Many of Mr. Ryan's sentences contained more than 140 words. I don't know how he ever could have managed in a Twitter universe of 140 characters. The pressure for quick answers weighs heavily on journalists as well. Gone are the days when a journalist had to produce one story or one column per day. A multimedia approach to stories is the flavor of the day, so journalists are required to blog, to tweet, to cobble together several stories simultaneously, while also producing a video. The risk is great that errors will be made, facts will be overlooked, and conclusions will be drawn before all the facts are in. I am certain that our politics and our media would be improved if we were to be inspired by Mr. Ryan's work habits, his intellectual rigor, and his integrity. I said at the outset that the time spent in Mr. Ryan's office was not all work and no play. Mr. Ryan took great pleasure in reading about many things, especially American society. He made the habit of ending each of his working days by reading the New York Times and was a keen observer of political battles, especially in the American Democratic Party. And sometimes you get lucky in life. I remember one evening when I was invited to a small dinner at the magnificent American Consulate in Quebec City, which is located overlooking the river right beside the Chateau Frontenac. New York Senator Patrick Moynihan was in town on a private visit. And the consul, William McCahill, invited us over for dinner. So there were five of us around this table, and we just sat back and had these two great thinkers talk all night. True to character, Mr. Ryan hardly touched his glass of wine, and Senator Moynihan hardly touched his meal. So they made a great balance there. But they both had so much followed and had so much sort of absorbed the great debates in the American Democratic Party since the 1950s, whether it was debates over affirmative action, housing programs, some of the points I think the professor made this afternoon about losing a faith in bureaucracy. So to see these two great minds having these debates, having these discussions on a magnificent Thursday night in Quebec City, me, the little kid from the West Island in the corner, sort of pinching myself and saying, I'm getting paid to do this. It was really a wonderful evening. And Mr. Ryan could laugh as well. And this is one occasion. Once, as Minister of Public Security, he was asked in question period about a newspaper article in which stated that the Sûreté du Québec had developed guidelines, a sort of code of conduct, for police officers conducting investigative works in strip clubs and exotic dancing establishments. Mr. Ryan skillfully avoided answering the question in the National Assembly and returned to our office, our cabinet, after question period. He called his chief of staff and me into his office, closed the door, and dug the SQ document out of one of his many briefcases and started to read from it. The title was something like Guide de conduite ou Guide de comportement des agents dans les isoloirs et des clubs de danse du Québec, or some similar drab bureaucratic language. Mr. Ryan began to read some of the very, very explicit instructions on where hands could be or not be placed, how long the hand could linger at certain places, and so on and so forth. It was hysterical. The chief and staff and I were laughing nervously because sex was not a subject we'd had ever discussed with Ms. Ryan before or since. And as you might well imagine, we eventually got a full-blown case of the giggles. Imagining the meetings, the solemn meetings of a committee of police officers setting down on paper these earnest guidelines for the conduct of their fellow officers in contact with strip club dancers. Finally, Mr. Ryan, with a twinkle in his eye, said, I guess it's a good thing that I did not table this document in the National Assembly. In conclusion, Mr. Ryan lives on in the memory of all those he inspired. He was always curious about our society and its inner workings. He was determined to identify the basic principles and values that form the foundation of our society. His world vision was based on his profound Catholic faith, his belief in Christian charity, and the Good Samaritan's reflex to look out for our neighbors and those most vulnerable. Words mattered to him. Language mattered to him. He perceived history as an important tool that could help us understand the world around us. To do things well, to achieve, meant hard work, relentless work. Like many people in this room, I often ask myself what Mr. Ryan would think or do in a given situation. How would he resolve a problem? Who would he consult? What principles would he invoke? He was a man of original thought, broad vision, and a compelling work ethic. May he continue to inspire Quebecers and Canadians long into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Now, Thomas Mulcair.
Merci beaucoup, Olivier. Je me suis amusé beaucoup en préparant mes notes pour aujourd'hui, parce que je voyage beaucoup. Alors, j'avais un petit calepin avec moi pour prendre des notes. Et le rire que vous entendez, c'est que toute personne ayant déjà côtoyé M. Ryan sait, petite habitude qu'il a gardée de ses jours de journaliste, il y avait toujours un petit calepin ici. Mais en fait, c'était sincère, parce que ce qui rentrait là-dedans, c'était effectivement une aide-mémoire, mais c'était aussi le reflet d'un profond respect pour son interlocuteur. Il n'interrompait pas, il prenait des notes. C'était lui, ça. The first time I heard about Claude Ryan was from my dad. To give you a bit of context, we've been talking a bit of family. I come from a family of 10 kids, and my dad was kind of hard to impress. But one of the things, I was one of the older kids, we were allowed to be adults with our parents and talk about politics. Both my parents loved politics. My mom's family has a very long history in Quebec politics. And it was good, because we were one of those things where you're allowed to exercise. My dad had come back from Toronto from a business trip, and he told me that he had been at the Canadian Club, and he had heard this guy from the Devoir give a speech, and he said it was so important. I said, well, what did he say? He said he was trying to tell people in Toronto that they had to wake up and understand that if we didn't pay attention to what was happening in Quebec, we could lose the country. And this guy's a Federalist. He said it was such an important message, and it was so well delivered. So seeing my dad that impressed, the name always stuck. Later on in the 70s, I was a young lawyer living in Quebec. They waived the normal rule for non-interference in the of public servants in political matters. This was pre-charter. Nobody had that sort of guaranteed right. So they waived the rule in the 1980 referendum. And we're having the same problems. They waived the rule in the 1980 referendum, and we were in fact allowed to do partisan work. So I can tell you that it was a real coming out politically of the whole Justice Department where I worked in Quebec City. There were actually three people willing to admit that they were going to vote no in the referendum. But we got to be quite friends with a couple of them. One of them was Pierre Gauthier, and we worked hard. And on one night, he said, on va aller voir le père Ryan, il va donner un discours à Val Belair. Now, il faut comprendre que Pierre était un organisateur libéral aguerri. Il avait déjà été chef de cabinet d'un ministère. Mais son sourire quand il parlait du père Ryan en témoignait long sur celui qui était devenu chef des forces du non. I was so impressed being in that hall in Quebec City. It's a fairly large hockey arena, several thousand people. The place was packed. It was early spring. It was hot. Mr. Ryan had lost his voice for all intents and purposes, but that wasn't going to stop him from delivering an impassioned speech about the place of Quebec in Canada and the need for Canada to be a better place by having Quebec in it. The Claude Ryan I got to know and work with for the better part of 20 years had just left that position as leader of the Quebec Liberal Party. He was now the opposition spokesperson in matters of education, and with several people who are still in this room, we were working then at something called Alliance Quebec. And instead of feeling badly about what had happened, because Mr. Ryan's time as leader of the Liberal Party, it should not be forgotten, served many purposes, one of which was to clean up the image of the Quebec Liberal Party, which had really suffered a lot before. So sometimes he went a little bit too far in that direction. I remember when he was meeting the people who were going to be running for him in the election, he set down a series of rules, and they were quite strict. You were had to be married, you weren't allowed to have any debts, and I remember the only way that one of his MNAs managed to deal with it, those of you who remember him, he's still around, George Springate, he dealt with it with humor. He came out and the journalists were all there, so what do you think about these new rules for Mr. Ryan? Mr. Springate intoned, well, there are only two people I know who can meet all those obligations, they're Claude Ryan and Jesus Christ. And then he went... And then he went on to say, and I'm not so sure about Jesus Christ. So, taking the broad hint, Mr. Ryan realized that he did have an important job to do in shaking the image of corruption that then existed for the party, but he had to open up a little bit more. Those around him will tell you that he did believe profoundly that his faith was an important element in his life, and he also, because he was so sincere when he dealt with people, I can always remember on Notre Dame Street, there were still elevators that had operators, and we literally had to pull him away, because he used to always get involved in conversations. He loved talking with ordinary folks, and he wanted to hear what they were thinking, but that also gave him a supreme confidence that he had the pulse of people, which he did in many respects. But there is a bit of a science to this politics thing, and I remember Pierre Bibeau telling me one day, he says, you know, we had this really great polling information that they were presenting, and they were offering to let Mr. Ryan use it. I don't need those polls. And Bibeau said, we'll take them anyway. And the people who knew about politics knew what they were going to do. The famous main de jeu that Patrice referred to earlier is worth going back to. Because anybody who knows Mr. Ryan would have understood how he would have said it. He was just basically saying, well, it's no longer in my hands. But of course, a religious reference came so easily to Mr. Ryan, it was second nature to him. But again, it became a way to diminish the man and to caricature him. And that actually made me sad, that part, because it was a slight that certainly wasn't deserved. When he named me to the Office des Professions du Québec, I was 32 at the time that he was interviewing me in his office, and the only time to get really the dress down, Claude Ryan, was on a Friday afternoon at his office at the Education Ministry. It was a fantastic experience. He took out a cigar and smoked a cigar. It was really, he was letting his hair down a little bit. But then it was an interview that wasn't an interview. He wanted to see how I reacted to things, and he was talking, and it was quite the experience, and he showed me in his office that he had two full-time shifts of secretaries to do all his correspondence, because he insisted on responding to every single letter himself. And I remember the letter, he said, here's an example. It was a mother from the lower north shore of Quebec who had three children who were in university, and he was showing me the draft of his response. He says, the first thing I do is I congratulate her for having three children in university, because she was a mother who was alone. So you can imagine what type of memory that brought up for him. And he says, and then I'm going to go and make sure I find some money for her within the ministry. Because he was always willing to do the right thing. And then he said at the end, this went very well, he says, Mr. Mirkel, je pense que ça devrait très bien aller ça. Vous avez quel âge? J'ai 32 ans. Age didn't scare him. Naming young people to... This is a deputy minister level position. Didn't bother him in the least. I put in my Le Devoir article today that André Fortier was 19 when he became chief of staff. André corrected me, saying, no, he was 19 when he started working for Mr. Ryan, but he was the ripe old age of 24 when he finally became chief of staff. But that was Mr. Ryan's way. He would say, you know, take young people. And then he looked at me and says, on va vous nommer, vous allez terminer votre bureau d'avocat. On va vous nommer en janvier. Vous auriez 33 ans. C'est l'âge du Christ. C'est très bien, ça. Because there was a lot to be cleaned up. But watching him go, that Jeff is completely right. It's that constant attention to detail. I had the pleasure of working with one other minister. They couldn't be more different in terms of their worldview and what they were trying to accomplish. But I worked for Dr. Camille Lorrain when I worked for several years at the Conseil de la langue française, and they had one thing in common. It was that intellectual rigor. It was based on so much. They read everything. Both of them were identical in that regard. But I will share with you an anecdote that Jeff knows about. One night we were debating. Mr. Ryan was then the opposition critic, and Dr. Lorrain was the Minister of Education. And they started a debate, and it was like dueling banjos, because one came up with a Latin quote, and the other one outdid him with another Latin quote. And this went on. They started fighting with each other in Latin in the hearing room in the basement of the National Assembly. But just don't think that everything was serious, because Patrice was right, and Jeff... The sound of Mr. Ryan's laughter still resonates when anyone worked with him. So this had been a particularly arduous debate, and Marcel Blanchet was then the head of the legal department there. Notices that Dr. Lorrain's taken off his shoes. It's a very long debate. Mr. Ryan puts his foot under the table and starts drawing one of Lorrain's shoes towards him. As he's leaving, he dumps it in the wastebasket on the way out. Anyway, Blanchet saw the whole thing without saying a word as Dr. Lorrain was going around looking for his other shoes. He says, I think I found it. And he went and fished it out for him. Oh, you can't be serious all the time. But he is an extraordinary... His was an extraordinary method when it came to analyzing a problem and coming to results. The first problem that I was asked to work with him on was the illegal schools. And Jeff Polins is at the back of the hall, our friend of long date. Jeff, great to see you. Jeff was instrumental. He was working for Mr. Ryan at the time. And he had this method, and it's what I tried to evoke a little bit in the paper that I wrote in Le Devoir today. And it is vraiment la méthode de Monsieur Ryan. He had this method of bringing opposing views around the table to get the information out. That was the calepin noir. So he was drawing out information, and he would let the others discuss it. He would ask questions, but he wasn't trying to impose a view. He didn't come in with it. It was guided by values. So when the issue of the illegal schools, for those who don't remember it, when Bill 101 came in, the Catholic Teachers Union had put together a pot where they would put money in to have other teachers hired so that they would keep teaching the kids in English. So that was an undertaking. They were going to put an end to that, and the PQ had never known quite what to do with it. Ms. Ryan said, we're going to put an end to it. But every step of the way, every part of the discussion was, we're not going to punish the kids. Pas question de punir les enfants. So that's a principle. He's taking a value approach to it. But he was also very funny, because I was, again, a young lawyer at the time. This was, before the Office de Profession and all that, because he named me to the Commission d'Appel de la Langue d'Enseignement after that. But on this particular Saturday, because Mr. Ryan didn't always drive the kids, on this particular Saturday, we were at the office, and he asked me for an explanation of a rather technical legal detail, and he pushed hard. I gave him a long, detailed answer, and he gruffly harumphed, and he looked over to Colin Irving, a very respected CR, and he said, Maître Irving, on a une version. Est-ce qu'on peut maintenant avoir la vérité? And he was pushing back a little bit like that. And Colin, very generously, said, non, il a tout à fait raison. And then Ryan looks over and said, okay. And he took that, and he put it then in as part of his solution. But what he was doing, he was testing whether or not how I would handle it. He wanted to see if I could give him the answer. And shortly after that, he named me commissioner on the appeal board that determined access to English schools. And I became a close advisor to him, and I worked with him on that. I would say that Jeff's example of the solution to the Bill 101 conundrum is probably the clearest one for me as well. It was the same method, and boy, were there opposing views in that room. And I remember, and he would just take his notes. I was pushing for something that was theoretically in contravention of the Supreme Court ruling in Brown Shoes, because they had said, il est interdit d'interdire. So I had fought the Brown Shoe case to get the right to have bilingual signs in Quebec. I had put that together when I was the lawyer for Alliance Quebec. But then we had to try to square the circle and allow some sort of control of the French face of Quebec, otherwise we'd have to go back to the notwithstanding clause. And I said, look, just keep billboards French only. I said, let the Metro store in Beaconsfield put up the bilingual. Let anybody else do anything they want bilingual. Come up with a rule that would respect the Supreme Court. It said it could be markedly predominant. What does that mean? So we came up with a few examples of that. But I remember when Jean-Claude Sanson, the head of the legal department at Justice, took it away, and Mr. Ryan was looking at him saying, can you do that? He said, I don't think so. But he came back at the next meeting and says, I think we can do it. And we had had some rather healthy arguments around that table, and I remember one day the head of the Office de la Langue Française had gone in a completely different direction, you know, about shutting everything down. And I just did a nice little Irish tune for him, and I said, really? And I just said, you know, nice rant. What kind of society do you want to live in? And that produced a rare smile from Mr. Ryan, who was just taking his notes like this, and we knew we had won the battle. And as Jeff said, having put together all the opposing views in that room and brought out all of the ideas based on values, he had to find a solution. There had been a United Nations decision. He wanted a solution, but he didn't want to go back to the notwithstanding clause. It had already broken the party apart, and he did it. Mr. Ryan's work in education, his work in areas like language and culture, is remarkable. We tend to forget who our heroes are. I picked a quote from Frank Gutman's extraordinary book on Télesphore Damien Bouchard from Henri Bourassa that shows the type of obscurantisme that Mr. Ryan always fought against in his career. Dans nos campagnes, surtout, on devrait réduire les études aux matières essentielles. Il est inutile et dommageable de garder trop longtemps à l'école l'enfant qui devrait continuer de vivre du travail des champs. That's what Mr. Ryan was fighting about. He was trying to change a worldview like that. And he did it successfully. He did it by thinking about the values that had brought him into that job. He was modest in his background. That informed his worldview. He was generous to a fault. And by the way, anybody tells you that he was terse or stern, look at Patrice and the sense of humor. That was Mr. Ryan as well. But he was rigorous. He was never going to be told that this was the popular view. I've been asked many times as well what I think would be his view. It's always difficult with someone who's no longer with us, but I'll end by saying this. Mr. Ryan would have been appalled to hear that it had become a widely held view that human rights depend on a large consensus social. Mr. Ryan always understood that rights had to be protected against our large consensus social. Heroes like Claude Ryan, like Télesphore Damien Bouchard, who always had the courage to stand up to what was a prevailing view that went against the respect of other people's rights, deserve to be recognized. This symposium is an extraordinary event, and I can't thank McGill and Newman House enough for having put it together. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Merci beaucoup. Nous allons procéder à une plus courte période de questions que nous avions prévue, étant donné que nos panélistes ont certaines obligations. Alors, nous allons prendre peut-être un 10 minutes de questions. We're going to take questions for maybe 10 minutes. So, please go ahead.
A question for Patrice. We heard many things about Claude's mother contribution, and can you tell us a bit about his relationship with his dad, since he grew up in a single parent family and kind of poor family? Can you say something about that?
Not all that much. Frankly, I never met the man. Obviously, he never talked about him really. I know that as a boy growing up, he wasn't there, but he would see him once in a while. I know that. And funny thing, and I haven't delved into it at all. I'm not about the past so much. But funny thing, my other brother, who's not here tonight, Henri, came up about a year ago with a photo taken of Henri somewhere in the Saguenay New Life, something like that, that came from the 50s or something like that. So apparently he did take off. He did stick around a little, so he saw his boys once in a while, rarely, I think, and took off and made a new life somewhere else around the Saguenay region. But that's pretty much the extent of it. Obviously, we're all...
No pressure.
There's a Bécamo, yeah. So Bécamo was not the Saguenay, sorry. But, you know, I'm from Montreal. It's all the same, right? couldn't help.
Our grandmother, Blandine, was depicted quite generously by the professor in his earlier conference, but she was a tough person. Like, they did not have an easy time. She wanted her three. She devoted her life to her three sons succeeding. She succeeded in that, but it was tough. It was a tough environment. And, for instance, we had never seen a picture of the grandfather because in the family pictures that she had kept, she had, like, taken her scissors and removed his head from the pictures. And what happened with André...
in Russia.
What happened with André is because he was at the Bastarache Commission, like when you're more on TV, people from the public start addressing you. He got an email from nowhere a year ago from someone who said his father was our grandfather's best friend and that he wanted to present him in a different light to us. And what he sent to André was like a newspaper article from Bécamo when he died, because he drowned, saying like Bécamo lost one of its more esteemed citizens. He was a municipal secretary there and had redone his life. And we had never heard about him, nor ever seen his pictures. So for breakfast, we got an email from our brother, like about a year ago. We discovered his picture for the first time. Wow. So there's quite a...
Thank you.
Just a question for Patrice. The relationship between Claude and his brother Yves...
Professor Gauvreau, let me give you this one.
Just a question about for Patrice about the relationship between Claude and his brother Yves. Did they talk a lot about journalism and politics? Because in some ways Yves had preceded Claude into journalism. He was a journalist and quite successful before Claude went to Le Devoir. So I'm wondering, did they talk a lot about approaches to journalism or political matters, things of that sort?
I'm not sure I can give you a precise answer. Maybe Paul will want to jump in, but I know they did talk quite regularly to the end. So probably you know a few times a month they would talk. I know they talk politics. I've never really heard them talk about journalism in the sense of, you know, whose view of how journalism should be. They would bitch about this and this journalist, and he's a separatist, and he's a this and that. You know, they would do that sort of media analysis, if you'll allow the. but in terms of an intellectual conversation, I don't think anybody ever had an intellectual conversation with Yves. So hard to imagine. I don't mean this to be meaning at all. He was a great guy, but he was down to earth, and it was, you know, I don't think his view of what he did as a journalist was intellectual at all. He would report facts and make them as interesting as possible to sell the paper, and you know, he was down to earth, very different from other. I don't know, Paul, if you've got anything.
Jeff? Well, if I could nuance that, just when Mr. Ryan became Minister of Municipal Affairs, the fact that his brother was a mayor. He did phone his brother to talk about municipal affairs. So journalism, no. And one night, if I had any talent as a playwright, I'd love to do a play, because I remember one night very clearly, I'm also a father of five children, and I remember I'd worked for Mr. Ryan for a vast time, 6 months, and there was a famous confrontation of the Quebec Liberal Party with the Allaire Report. And Mr. Ryan was mistreated on the floor of a convention, left, brought us all back to Complex Desjardins, announced that he was resigning as minister. Sick, five kids at home, I just lost my job. So we all did what good Irishmen go out, we went out to a pub. And so, but your father, what he did is he went and met with his two brothers. And I would love to do a play around that kitchen table, those three magnificent faces, Mr. Ryan exploring with his two brothers his options. Should he stay with the Bourassa government and fight the good fight against the Allaire Report, or stick to his first instinct, which was to quit. And I just love to do a play that night around that kitchen table, those three characters who were so different. I didn't know your uncle the judge as well. I knew your uncle Eve a little bit. But I would like to say that as Minister of Municipal Affairs, he did turn to Eve because the municipal affairs is detailed, it's very difficult, and just to practically know if I do this, what's the impact on your municipality, Eve? He used his brother that way often.
Just two anecdotes towards the end of Claude Ryan's life. The day after, I think it was around the day after he had found out that he had terminal cancer, we got a call from him here, and he asked me to come up to see him at the hospital. He was still in the hospital at that point. And when I arrived, he just got off the phone, and he was actually looking quite positive. And instead of talking about his illness and what he was facing, with almost a bit of joy, he was talking about the fact that he had he was just talking to this woman, Anna. Patrice just reminded me of her name at the break. And the story related was that he had met Anna one day, one winter day, a cold winter's day. She was standing at the bus stop waiting for the bus, and he recognized her. This was a woman he saw in the church that he went to in Outremont every Sunday. So he pulled over, stopped, and said, "Would you like a lift to church? We both go to the same church and the same service." So she was grateful. She knew Mr. Ryan, was kind of awed by the fact that he had, was invited her to have a lift to church. So as they were driving, he drove her back and said, "Well, why don't we make this? I'll pick you up. You live just around the corner. I'll pick you up every Sunday, and we'll take you to church and drive you back." So he said, over the course of their friendship, she kept saying, "Mr. Ryan, I wish there was some way I could pay you back, and for all your generosity and your friendship, I'm so honored," and so on. And he said, "I just got off the phone, and I was just telling Anna," he said, "there's a way you can pay me back. I just found out a way you can pay me back." Anna was a retired terminal care nurse. And he said, "Anna," he said, "you can care for me in the last months of my life." And that she did. The other anecdote was a few days before his passing. I got another call from him. I think he was back in the hospital, and this time it was near the end. And as I mentioned earlier, he was just a shadow of himself physically. And he wanted to talk. I walked away from that hour-long meeting with him intellectually exhausted because he was just going over a whole slew of things with me. But one of them, he wanted to review the manuscript. We had a reader look at the manuscript and work through it, and he had about a dozen comments. And he wanted to work through the comments with me on the manuscript on Catholic social thought. So I'm reading through all, he couldn't read. He had trouble with his eyesight, which interestingly, when I first started off to talk, I was having trouble reading my text. but he had trouble reading. So he said, "Could you read out the comments to me, and I'll respond to them?" So I did, one by one. And he would respond and comment. And I got to one comment by the external reader. He was saying, the comment was, "Mr. Ryan, do you think, in this 500-page manuscript, which is on Catholic social thought, there's a reference to, there's regular references to only one modern theologian, John Henry Newman." And there was an element of irony, obviously, in the question. "Do you think Newman is the only modern theologian worthy of note?" And talk about Mr. Ryan's laughter. The room just filled with his laughter at that point. He knew the reader was on to something. It caught him out on this. And he just stopped for a moment. He says, "Yes, he is. Next question."
No other question? Maybe one last one? No? So I would thank the three panelists. Merci beaucoup.
Et pour, excusez-moi, pour le bénéfice de tout le monde, le symposium va recommencer demain matin, 9h30, au Sofitel cette fois, salle Monet-Chagall, 9h30. So the symposium will resume tomorrow, 9:30, at the Sofitel, room Monet-Chagall. Thank you very much. And please keep your card for tomorrow. Thank you so much.